These are the moments we all live for. How many times have we seen these three work together? Elma Smith out of Africa, straight into the biltong shops of Southwest London. Emily Scarrett, Scazzy Das. Surely you can never run a switch too many times. And Mo Hunt, chippy, snipey, sporty, karaoke. Sounds like the new Spice Girls. Here they come, the good, the Scazz, the rugby.
Hello and welcome to the Good, the Scazz and the Rugby, brought to you by our friends from Vodafone. Round three is done and dusted. Didn't disappoint. France bested Italy in Paris. And the fans out there, French kiss, chef's kiss. Is that the word? French kiss is something else. Chef's kiss. We started off on a great note here. Okay. So go France. Many kisses to you. Cuckoo. The Red Roses. They weathered the actual storm. Everyone in the studio is literally borderline falling off their chairs now. It's not that funny, guys. The storm in Scotland lived up to everything I told you. I had the biggest I told you so during that anthem when it looked like it was coming in sideways and the girls couldn't hear themselves singing. So there we go. Scotland, just Scotland. And Cork, what an upset. Ireland scored a commanding win over Wales there. To help us unpick that result and many other things, we're joined by our Welsh Bureau, our Empower Her mentors, hosts of the Say It How It Is podcast, completely branded up. They are wearing hoodies that has the name of the podcast right in the middle on their chest.
You need to zoom in.
In case you can't see it. Welsh scrum half Fionn Lewis, second row Gwen Crabb. Welcome. Is it ready enough in here for you guys?
Just about, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you fit right in nice. In your little red blouse.
There's very little here that isn't wearing red. Genuinely, the
except
backdrop.
Us.
Yeah. The two of you letting the side down in the biggest
nails. I'm in black.
Your nails.
Oh yeah. I always have red nails. To be
She's
fair.
Got the red nails. I do love a red nail myself.
I always have a red nail.
I can't pull it off.
What?
Personally,
you can't
pull
it
off a red nail. I'm a patterned kind of gal.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm serious.
Why wouldn't you be able to pull off a red nail?
I don't know. I can't because Fionn does it.
Oh, so she took
got
it.
Steel show.
It is a very Fionn Lewis colour, red nails.
Bold. Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's in caps lock.
Yeah, it is. I have a little bit of glitter.
That is Fionn to a T.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. I'm going to use that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaks only in caps.
Splash of glitter, guys. Splash of glitter. Got a glitter heart on my nail. But other than that, it's all around, yeah.
All of my texts to producer Shira are always in full caps. All of the sentences, everything. That's why she calls me the shouty lady. So how are the two of you doing? Shall we do we just do the ACL thing up front and then like that's done, or are we going to leave it to later? Like
you go first.
Okay,
well, what do you want to know?
Fionn Lewis, how are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. Nearly a year post ACL, actually.
Mm-hmm.
2 weeks time will be a year. It's gone quite quick. Not being able to make Six Nations, which was hard, but wasn't meant to be, but hopefully can return before I'm 60. No, it's fine. Like, last year was tough, like, on the back of three operations. And then, yeah, coming into this year, like I said, like, Six Nations was my goal, but now I'm just looking at getting back fit whenever that may be and just trying to be as healthy as possible, really.
That's tough.
Mm. Yeah. Well, apparently I was jealous that she had three operations, so I wanted another one.
You're just adding it to the list.
Just thought I better have three as well.
Yeah.
I had a couple of issues with my other knee.
Mm.
So my ACL knee was going strong. And then I actually ruptured my ACL on this side 7 years ago or something. And I had a couple of issues with it. And then I injured it against Exeter. And then we tried to rehab it to push through Six Nations. I actually injured it again in the week before Six Nations. It was also pretty tough because Six Nations was always my goal, and I was like excited to come back into that. Yeah, similar to Felix, it wasn't meant to be. I kind of had to put myself first as a person over myself as a player and think about like my longevity and also my mental health with it as well, because coming back from a significant injury, it's not easy playing on another injury, especially in the same sort of joint. So opted to go with having the op, and it was a good job we did, really, because they found a tear in my meniscus, so stitch that up and we're good to go. And now just looking forward to getting my rehab underway and hopefully getting back for pre-season.
Oh my gosh. So that is why neither of you were in Cork. Is that all of it? What you've got the endo battles, like, just because, you know, a knee isn't bad enough.
Yeah,
endometriosis, for those who don't know, is when tissue grows
outside of the uterus.
Outside of the uterus, but it's uterine tissue, so it does not belong in other places.
No, but it can kind of like stick all of your organs and stuff together, and like, oh, it's just not very nice.
It's danger, danger stuff.
Yeah, there's like the stories and the people I've met from like not being able to have children, having stoma bags, like having like multiple operations. I'm talking like double figures of operations, like can really destroy your life, really. I'm quite lucky and fortunate that the support I've had through Wales medically, that I've had a brilliant surgeon, built a really good relationship with through this process, but some people aren't as lucky and as fortunate as that. And it can take up to 7 to 10 years to get a diagnosis. And by then, for some people, it's too late. And I've always said throughout this process, like, I'm not in the position where I'm planning to have kids anytime soon. You know, like, I'm very career focused, but as a woman, you should never have that choice taken away from you. And I think that's the hardest thing with this condition, is that some people, yeah, get that choice taken away.
Mm. Infertility is also, it's such an emotive topic, because it changes so much about, suddenly you weren't even thinking about having children, and then when that choice gets taken away from you, suddenly there's this whole other layer of complexity in terms of mental health that you're also battling with. But how does endo on a daily basis for you as a professional athlete make training harder? Because I have suffered from incredibly heavy, like, this is now getting out of hand really early in the conversation, but I literally once vomited on my way to class in a very public place because of the pain. So I don't have full-blown endometriosis, but I have it badly enough that I've had some really public bad experiences. And it does, in certain ways, it does impact my work, but it doesn't impact my work nearly as badly as yours does for you.
Yeah, I think that's actually what made me realise something was actually wrong, is because of my job. Like, I've always had painful periods, heavy periods. Everyone calls me Satan in training because when it's my time of the month, I'm not fun to be around. I'm literally like demon. So it was like a kind of running joke. But it wasn't until we turned professional where I started noticing the intensity of the training was going up, and then my body was kind of punishing me for it. Like, I was, every time I was doing a hard running session or a bike session, I was having these episodes of pain. We were in the World Cup, and we were doing those, do you remember, we were doing those bike sessions, doing these, those masks.
Yeah, basically it's like hypoxia training. So it's like where they withdraw as much oxygen from you, and they expect you to like repeat really high intensity efforts.
It's like running at altitude.
Yeah, it's like really max exertion stuff, like 6 seconds on, 24 seconds off, 6 times 3 rounds. So it's it's really hard with these masks.
And we were doing that every day when we got there, and every day I was flaring, and I didn't understand why at that stage. Like, I was running to the toilet, I was in this pit, so much pain. All sorts of stuff was going out of me, front ways and every way. Sorry to be graphic, but... And I was like, this pain can't be normal. Like, I thought maybe I'm just really unfit, but I'm about to go and play a World Cup. I'm in the best shape of my life. Happen every day. And then, like, post-World Cup, doing running sessions still happening. And then fast forward a year after my diagnosis, I thought, okay, I'll be fixed and I'll be fine. But in this rehab process, when I'm learning to run again, it's actually been so much worse.
Really?
The last few weeks, like, I was literally flaring like every session, and in the space of like 3 weeks, I flared like 5 times. And usually my flares are, I can control them enough where I can see them come in, that I can like remove myself from the group and I can run to the toilet and I can be control it on my own. But I had one episode where I was down the field, like with a lot of the girls, a lot of staff, and it was the first time I had a flare in front of some like other people. And I just, it was like really exposing because I didn't really have anywhere to go. And I was just like, I just had to have a flare like on the grass. I was in so much pain. It was like the worst flare I've ever had. And a lot of people endo always have this fear that they feel like people don't believe them, because it's such an unknown disease where there's not enough known about it. And because it's so internal, you worry that people don't believe you. And like, even though I was displaying, you know, this pain and I was crying, rolling around, I still was like kind of like embarrassed. I was worried that, oh my gosh, are they thinking I'm being dramatic, or they think like I'm making it up? But like you said yourself, don't you, like, shouldn't feel embarrassed.
Yeah, and like as the other person, like as the friend, as the teammate, like we know that no one thinks that, but I can like, I can understand. It's not like when you have a, you know, the first thing, like we joke about it, but like when you're injured, the first thing someone says is, how's your knee? Or how's your shoulder? But no one's ever like, how's your endo, Fee?
Yeah.
Because it's invisible. You can't see it. And also other people can't relate to the pain, or other people can't relate to what's going on. So, you know, 9 times out of 10 in rugby, someone's had a knee injury. So people are like, oh, how's your knee? Oh, yeah, mine was sober, you know? Mm-hmm. But no one really, like you said, it's unknown. And
but I think this is the first, that was the first time I really thought to myself, oh my gosh, I'm not going to be able to do my job. Like, how severe it was, that made me really question myself as an athlete, because I was like, if I can't complete a fitness session or a training session, how am I going to be able to actually be a rugby player? So that was quite scary, because I was like, what is my future like as a 27-year-old athlete that's just turned pro? But it's all about managing it and like taking each day as it comes, but it's not easy.
And if you are a man listening to this, someone who does not understand the uterus and all of the frustrations around endometriosis, what makes this something that makes me want to bang my head against a wall about is that there is so little research. Mm. There is so very little data and reliable information, both on endometriosis and generally female reproductive health, but also only 6% of sports science research is done on the female body. Yeah. So, and that relates to the ACL in the biggest possible way, because women are between 2 and 8 times more likely to suffer an anterior cruciate ligament injury. No one knows why, but it's a fact. It has been proven. The numbers at this stage tell us that there is a space here that we need to fill in.
Mm. Yeah.
But you guys are at this stage, no one is studying you yet, are they?
I think now they are starting to, because last year alone, or in that kind of 12-month period, like this ACL numbers skyrocketed. Like it was actually ridiculous. Not just in rugby and like football, even football, it was like crazy women's football, how many women were having ACL injuries. There's talk around, like, obviously the way our hips are compared to males, that we're more susceptible because the way our knees are aligned.
So it's the width from your hip relative to the inside of your knee.
Yeah.
So if you imagine that angle at which the ligament is strained, that is why some people say there is a higher risk of injury.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then there was talk around, obviously, a lot of us have just become professionals, so that crazy difference in like training load and intensity, and then if your body can be able to sustain that level, there's a lot of talk around that as well.
Yeah, that was my theory, I'm gonna call it, but I was 17 when I had my first ACL injury, so I've been almost hyper aware to it for 7 years or so. I think what I've actually found is, like, of course women's sports since I was 17 has increased so much, and the participation, and now the professionalism. So if you look at how long it would take us to complete 100 hours of training 7 years ago versus how long it takes us to complete 100 hours of training now, of course the incidence of injury is going to be more. So you might have 10 ACLs per, this is just completely plucking this out of the air, but 10 ACLs per 100 hours, but if you complete your 100 hours twice as quick, then your 10 ACLs, you're going to do 5 ACLs more quicker. And that was one thought that I had around it, because, and also you've got to remember that the publicity of female sport is tripled or quadrupled. So the ACL injuries have always been there, because I had it, and the amount of people that I spoke to when I was 17 that had done their ACLs, it's just, it wasn't a known thing. And I think it is something that's actually been going on for a very, very long time. And it just happened that last year or the year before was when these things started to get really publicized. And then of course it looks like, there's an epidemic. Like, and what's going on, and is it surfaces? And the thing is, there's so many moving parts. Like, you've got, like, having done a bit of work with ACL rehab coaching, I can see how there's so many moving parts in terms of the way your pelvis works. Like, if your pelvis is a certain way and your foot is facing this way, like the way I did my latest one was, I would say that no one's knee was surviving that. Because the way my foot was planted was way.
Yeah.
My body was upright and I twisted inwards, and there's just no chance.
And that was the same for mine, I did mine, because mine was a twisting movement and I was going at 100 miles an hour.
100 miles an hour?
100 miles an hour.
You said boy. You're a step out the way, you say.
So I was going 100 miles an hour.
Neat. You learn with Fionn that she tends to just exaggerate things. Like 100,000 billion, million hours, 100 billion, trillion. I'm like, yeah, that makes sense.
Anyway, I was going really fast.
Okay.
And the twist, going that fast, you ain't saving no ACL.
Yeah. And I just think it is hard, because, like, obviously we're not, in terms of like the scientific side of things, we're no experts. So it's hard to put your finger on exactly what it is. But, and then when you add into the mix, of course, like as women, like you were mentioning with the Q angle, menstrual cycles is a whole other uncharted territory. There's just so many things. Mm. And, but one thing that I have found is deceleration and hamstring strength, because women tend to have more of like a 2-to-1 hamstring quad ratio, which is something we've seen in our rehab, doing our strength testing and stuff. Those two things got increased in the programs after all of the ACLs happened, and touch wood, there has been no ACL since within our programs. So it could just be coincidence. It could just be science, or it could be as simple as that. Or that it could be that we've become used to the training volume, like we were saying before. But there's just so many question marks around it without the research as well.
And this is not a rugby problem, because a quarter of the Ballon d'Or nominees in 2022 had done the ACLs. And so it has gained prominence in different sporting codes. And I think this is the wave of professionalization in women's sport that is like, it's kicking in loads of different places all at the same time. And as you say, we're trying to get a fair read on this. If you could say to 17-year-old Gwen now, even if your coach isn't doing this, even if no one else has told you this, please just do this one thing around training or strengthening. These are the extras you should be focusing on.
It's tricky. I think in terms of myself, I would say maximize the gym. The gym is always pushed as a performance enhancer, but more so it's an injury preventer. And that's the way it should be seen as well in rugby, because that's really important, because a lot of injuries are ligaments, but they're to do with, you know, a ligament can go if a muscle isn't strong enough, or if your movement isn't in the right way. But the gym is the place that you sort of lay that foundation. In terms of one thing, probably single leg work, because for a long time I was just squatted. But actually, you might be imbalanced. You might, well, pretty much just might be imbalanced. But you know, you don't know how much weight you're applying through both feet. And running is a single leg action. Changing direction is a single leg action. So if you don't actually complete strength exercises, power exercises on a single leg, how do you expect to do them injury free?
I think that's what we've tried to do with our social media now for this process, is just like being very open about what our recovery's been like. Like, a long-term injury is not sunshine and rainbows.
Should I say sunshine and butterflies?
It is such a roller coaster, and like, it makes me think, like, if I didn't have the support of being in an environment where someone was telling me that knew what they were doing, what to do, I wouldn't know what to do. So it makes me think, someone going through it that doesn't know, like, I think we've both tried to be as helpful as we could on social media with our own journeys. So if someone was looking at, okay, what are you prioritising in your training? Like Gwen said, single leg stuff, or, you know, things like that, to be able to help people that are in the similar situation to us that don't have that kind of level of support.
And all of this happening in the context of Worcester folding for you, Fionn, your club. Not having a club, and then the endo, and then the knee. Is there a point at which you were going, anyone else want to take a shot?
Honestly, I was like, come on, come at me, I dare you.
Like, I mean, if someone cuts in front of you in traffic now, are you this close to just
going?
I
can't actually. The camera's looking at me, so I probably wouldn't show you what I would do if someone cut me up.
Yeah.
To be honest, yeah. I think it's hard when you're in it, because you, like, now when I reflect back on the last year, I'm like, gosh, I have had many mental breakdowns, I can't lie.
Yes, I've been
but
there.
Yeah,
Gwen's like,
club,
I've seen things.
I know, swear with my friends now. But yeah, Worcester folding, oh, that was tough, because everything we went through the year before with, you know, like fighting for the club to get back up and running, and, you know, we stuck together and like everyone like stayed committed to the club. And then, yeah, being in that position where, you know, losing your club, and then being really honest, it was very real. I was like, no one's going to want to sign an ACL injury, you know, halfway through my rehab, you know, already quarter way through the season. So I was very like aware of that. I think I didn't let it stress me out too much, because of I knew my return wasn't going to be pre-Six Nations. So I was like, if I was going to return 2 months before, I think I would have been really stressed, because I know I would have needed to play and get the game time before. Yeah. Because I knew I wasn't going to be fit before then, I tried to not let that be a priority or a stressor on me. It's now playing on my mind now, because, like, you know, not making Six Nations and thinking of my future now. Okay, where do I go? Like, where do I play post-Six Nations? Our girls are going to be going back to club. And then I'm questioning, okay, I don't have a return date at the moment, but if I do, like, what does that look like for me? Is I'm in a position now where I could not be playing until WXV, which is like 19 months, which is a very scary position to be in as an international rugby player.
That is objectively crazy.
Yeah, I know. It's tough, but I think I suppose we've learned a lot throughout this process, us both going through injuries and stuff we've been through the last year with, if you sit on these things too much and you think about it too much, like, you're only doing yourself damage in that sense.
Well, the upside for us is that you are available to come and join us on Super Saturday. Are coming down to the Principality Stadium. Anyone else who might be making their way down to the Principality Stadium, please do join us. We're doing a live show. A little getting everyone in the mood
show.
I've
got a request, though. Can you please not make me wear that daffodil on my head this time?
This time we will try and get actual real daffodils and not sunflowers.
It didn't fit on my head. My head was so big. It barely fitted.
It was a bit
big. I had the opposite problem.
So this time we'll be nicer to you.
Thank you.
We have given Gwen Crabb notice this time that she's also going to be...
I'm not going to buy a ticket. Last time.
She's not going to buy a ticket this time. She's actually going to come play with us. Philippa Tatiet is coming. And we would like you to join us. Children are free and students can join us at half price. So come on, come all. No drag brunch vibes this time
that
around.
Was funny, that was.
Yeah, it was.
That was really wild.
Funny. At one point I was like, I can't even hear myself, so I don't even know what I'm saying anymore.
And you speak loud.
All right.
And you do not, just to be clear, do not need to buy a ticket, Gwen.
Okay, thanks. Yes. I did need that confirmation.
Okay, cool. Just want to make sure that we've emphasized this enough because she's bought enough tickets to come to the Good, the Scars and the Rugby events for the next forever.
Oh, dear.
We have this to look forward to, but let's quickly just recap. Wales, at the bottom of the table then. Shall we just say that and then that's done?
Yeah, please don't say it again.
18-20 loss to Scotland at Cardiff Arms Park. Now, I can say this because I'm not Fionn. We were so psyched for that game. We talked through those two 75th and 78th minute tries that you made such a big contribution to the team in that exact fixture in 22 and 23. But now that feels like a very long time ago because that game was tough going. And at the end of it, I'm sure you must have gone 2 points, could have gone any which way, so close, all is not lost. How much now do you look back on that result? And I guess it's unfortunate because it's only in hindsight that you learn these lessons, but something should probably have shifted there already. Did anything shift there already? Or what are we seeing playing out at the moment?
I think the key thing from that game was capitalising on your opportunities when you enter the 22. I think we left so many unanswered points in that game. And like in a game like that, it's almost like, it's all right, because we'll get back in the 22. And it's back and forth and back and forth. But ultimately, you've got to score to win a game of rugby. And like you said, those 2 points, they could have come from many places throughout that game. And I think that that game was an opportunity for us to unite as a squad. Okay, we're going forward. Obviously, we knew we had England coming up next, which is never easy. And having that in the back of your mind is always going to be tricky. I was actually positive. Like, I was impressed with the way we came out then against England because I feel like our attack is what needed work moving into that game. And again, we were knocking on the door. We were 10 metres out. We were 5 metres out. But opportunities were left. And that's 2 weeks with opportunities gone missing. And then all of a sudden we go into a game and we lose by 36 points. And we don't even, I think we've sort of taken a step backwards in terms of our attack there because we had opportunities, we didn't capitalise on them. And now we've almost not got those opportunities. And I just think it all comes back to that first game against Scotland. Rugby's a game about momentum, especially in a tournament like the Six Nations. And I think that was a perfect opportunity for us to get our foot in the door and to build a bit of momentum going forward.
Don't you agree? Hannah Jones was saying quite dejectedly and quite deadpan the way she does. She's disappointed. She said it's going to hurt. Ireland came out of the blocks. They played better than us. We get a chance in the 22 and then we've got to convert. I'm saying the same thing every week. It's about the want. It's about the heart. She said they wanted it more than us and they showed it in their performance. I believe tough innings make tough people. We've got to stay tight. We weren't good enough today. What have you made of Hannah's take, Fionn?
It's tricky because it's hard for us to comment because we are not obviously there because we're not the ones taking the field at the moment. So it is difficult for us to comment. But like I don't blame her for coming out and saying what she said, because Scotland for us winnable, like, was targeting for us for a winnable game. Ireland targeting us for a winnable game. Like, we going back off the performance we put in last year, finishing third, like, that was the pressure on our shoulders to, like, maintain that this year. Yeah, it's tough. It is tough. And I think that we can't keep saying the same things week in, week out, that, you know, saying we're on a journey and saying that, you know, we'll learn and we'll do better next week. If we're not doing better next week, well, why aren't we doing better? And a performance like the Ireland, yeah, it isn't good enough, because, like I say, you go back to last year, that the scoreboard's completely different. You go back to the year before. So she's right in what she's saying, and I back her saying that. I just hope that these next two games, that we can kind of give ourselves some justice with having a different kind of result.
Squidge, I think, said it really well. He said today has to be a line in the sand. For the last few campaigns, there's been a lack of scrutiny around women's rugby in Wales and the national team above it. Just because things are better than they were doesn't mean they're acceptable. 25 mm-hmm. contracts on £18,000 to £25,000 per year is not enough. A pro team in Wales is necessary. The development pathways are an improvement, but there's nowhere for the talent to go once they age out. If I gave you the keys to the principality,
right,
and said the two of you, everyone out, we've chased them all out, they're standing outside here, go in, log in to the system, do your worst, go for it. I mean,
what do you mean do your worst?
What are you going to do? What's the first thing?
Like, so a pay rise, to be honest.
Fiona's goes in, she gives all the girls 100k a year, then what next?
Yeah, 100%. The priority needs to be sorting out our club game in Wales. If we just talk about the Ireland result, those Irish girls were playing in the Celtic Challenge together, collectively, the last few months.
So bring all the Welsh girls back?
Well, I think there needs to be an opportunity where, number one, you've got the girls coming up, they've got somewhere to play, where it's a step up from what we've currently got, because in Wales we haven't really got that much now, and an opportunity for the girls that are over the bridge to come back, because it is difficult. You've got girls on very good prem contracts and playing a very good standard of rugby. Like, you've got to be able to offer them something for them to know what they're leaving that for. Like, it's kind of like a trust thing. You know, we've been battling this for years and years. They've got to see that they can trust what they're leaving something really good for to come back. Like, I'd love to play in Wales. Like, that is what I'd love to do. Like, if it got sorted and arranged where, like, you know, the league was set up and you guaranteed X amount of games and it's a really reliable league, then brilliant. Because a lot of us want to play in Wales. Unfortunately, there isn't something there that's good enough, or, like I said, that you can't trust that it's going to be good enough for these girls to leave their very good setups in England to come back for. So that is one thing I thought of straight away, because I think that, yeah, you look at Ireland now, I think they've really benefited from playing together the last few months in the Celtic Challenge.
But those Irish girls will tell you the fact that they're not allowed to play in the PWR is the thing that gives them nightmares.
Yeah.
And they are managing to pull out the performances out of nowhere at this stage in the Six Nations, seemingly off the back of a very disappointing campaign last year.
I think it's about, like, spending, like, the time you have together. So, like, usually you'd have a lot of time building up to a campaign. We only had, I think we had like two weeks together. And it is difficult when you think about our squad alone, how many girls are in so many different clubs across England. You're all playing in completely different ways. You play different calls, you play in different structures, to then all come back collectively together and then kind of have to, like, train yourself out of that quite quickly and quite a quick turnaround. There are a few girls that have come up that have been capped in the Six Nations already who've played exceptionally well in the Celtic Challenge. So I think that that shows that it's an opportunity for them. But I just think that the priority needs to be sorting out the game in Wales. A few years ago, we used to have something called regional rugby. There's four regions: Scarlets, Ospreys, Blues and Dragons. And that's all I remember as a girl growing up. Like, we used to play age grade under 18s and you go up to seniors and it was brilliant. It was such good rugby. And unfortunately, that's not possible anymore. We don't have that. I think losing that was probably the worst thing we did for rugby in Wales.
To bring that back.
Yeah, I would say so. But it's hard you even go about doing that. And I think Celtic Challenge is almost like a...
It's now the replacement for that.
It's just about how quickly and efficiently can we build these Celtic Challenge teams. And like Fiona was saying about the investment, like, I don't think it's realistic for 25 girls that are playing in England, like Fiance on contract, in really top quality facilities to come back to Wales with no contracts in those clubs.
You need to think about that financially though as well. Like, we've just turned pro, and obviously it's not, no one, obviously everyone's aware that we're not on like three figure salaries. Yeah. Like, people can't leave like a double figured prem club to come back to play for free, and then when you're already, your contract isn't massively brilliant. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah, but we have this conversation in, about the men's game all the time, where England fans obsess over whether men's players should be allowed to go play in France. And I always point to the South African example, which is where the rand, there are 25 rands to every pound. There is no way in the South African context that you will ever keep all of your players at home. You physically do not have enough money in the system to keep them there. So yes, they're going to be in Japan and in France and in Ireland and all over the place. There has to be a way where you can do the and solution here instead of the or solution, where you go, we have girls playing in the PWR and geographically this works because they're right next door, and we have a like an absolute, you know, wealth of talent coming through the Celtic Challenge, and we align both, which requires a lot of management.
I think it works for some people, and it works for, it does work for some people, and it doesn't work for others. Like, I feel like we're at a point where people feel like they have to. It's not like I'm going to play in the Prem because it's what I want to do and it's going to work for me. People feel like they have to because they've got nowhere else to play. Like, you've got some girls travelling hours, coming back at like 11 o'clock at night, and I know we're pro now, but it's still not like, when you leave at like 9, 10 o'clock in the morning, it's still not like sustainable. And I just think that there's got to be that gap. You will, regardless, you will always have girls in the Prem. You will always have them in the Prem. That's fine, because some girls it works brilliantly for, but it doesn't work for others that aren't even playing, aren't getting picked, are just signed to be signed to a club and not even gaining anything from it. So those girls that are like in between, if you've got them back playing in Wales, who they are also playing week in, week out, brilliant, because we're just building that strength and depth. Those girls that... Okay, one of your starting back row gets an injury, you're calling up on this girl that hasn't played any minutes for the last year. Like, that, those are the things we need to think about that, that continues to really challenge that depth that we're saying that we need to build.
Yeah, an opportunity to play. Speaking of opportunities to play, Cleona Maloney. Oh my goodness. So yes, and there, and 100% excited for the fact that she's had the recall from exile off the bench. Great impact. Aoife Wafer, if you had her in your fantasy team,
she's unbelievable.
So good. I like, she's rapid.
And I felt really guilty for like loving watching her, because I was like, she just like genuinely, I watched her the week before and I was like, sorry. She's class. I genuinely think, you heard it here first, she's winning World Player of the Year. Like, I actually think she is unbelievable. Like, the way she can evade players, make line breaks, like, it's unbelievable. It's something else. Like, she gets through gaps. So she's like, how did you get through there? She's so good.
When she got Player of the Match, and then all the like, how happy she was, and everyone was so buzzing for her, and like, she was literally like grinning from year to year, and I think that's lush when a player like that gets
I also saw on Niamh Jones's story, it made me giggle. Niamh did like a Q&A the day before and said something about pre-match food. And apparently she eats 4 tins of rice pudding across the 24 hours before a game. I was like, 4 tins? Like, that's
tins.
A lot. 4 tins. I know, not even a nice refrigerated one. Yeah, 4 tins of rice pudding.
Of rice
well,
across
pudding the 24 works.
Hours. I was like, that's what I'm doing wrong.
We need to order a crate of rice tins of rice pudding.
I don't even like rice pudding. Oh, I need to start, don't I?
I have no idea what this even would taste like, but I have a feeling we should get that.
Yeah, I can't imagine it tasting brilliant, but apparently...
Clearly it works.
I mean, that's good carb loading, isn't it?
I was going to say, bring it. Yeah. If it's good enough for her, 21 years old, only a handful of
21,
caps.
21, like what? That is mental.
It's actually outrageous. I actually think she's class.
That's mental.
Sorry, but I actually think she's brilliant.
Either way, for fan
she's
club.
So good. She's so good.
Great crab.
No, I just really appreciate a really good ball carrier that can use their feet. And like, she just,
you're a bit red,
so
Gwen.
I know I am. It's because I'm getting excited. I know. But I think it was like her first 5 carries, she made 49 meters.
Why?
I was like, 10 meters per carry. Like, I don't think I've made that many meters in my life. Like, I'm not joking. Like, I'm a 2 meter carry guy.
Please clip all of this, Julie, just all.
I
on this one player.
Now because you're embarrassing me.
Okay, I'm going to tee you up for one that will get you into less trouble with your friends, Gwen Hopkins.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, what an impact. Yeah. I thought she was brilliant.
Really good. She obviously is signed at Gloucester.
Mm-hmm.
So I've seen her in training and seen her play for Gloucester and stuff. And I've always been really excited for when she got her opportunity. Like she's a great ball carrier and she's very quietly confident in her abilities, I think, which I really like because she's not, you know, she's not like really loud about it, but she just like, she just does her job. Yeah, I think she did really well.
I think
she's
the future. I do. I'm telling you now, she's going to be a captain wheel. Just telling you.
Wow.
She's just so articulate.
Yeah, she is.
Articulate.
Great word. She learned that off me.
She's honestly, I can't even believe how young she is because I listened to her speak and I admit her that. I literally, we had a meeting last week and I said to her afterwards, you spoke so well. Like you, and then her playing, the way she played, like it was really tough coming on in a game like that, especially for your first cap. But I think, yeah, she brought great impact. Again, hasn't played that much for Gloucester. Mm. Had the opportunity to play in the Celtic Challenge, really benefited from the minute. And then that's got her selected to be in the Six Nations and now she's capped. So when you get girls playing, brilliant.
Yeah, she goes back.
Get them playing.
Get them playing.
Speaking of getting them playing, your podcast, Say It How It Is, sponsored by our good friends, the friends we have in common. Why don't you have the Vodafone logo on your hoodies yet? What are you waiting for?
It's another colour, to be fair. I do have them on the back of my phone, though, if that helps.
Yeah, that's true.
There we go. Yeah. So you're going strong into season two now.
Yes, we are.
What do you wish you could tell a start of season one, Fionn, now in hindsight?
That you're a brave girl.
Why?
No, I think that, like, I don't know, it was really scary because we were like, what? Like, we just didn't know what we were getting into in the sense of...
It was actually hilarious. Like, episode one was hilarious. We didn't know
what
we were doing.
We took about half an hour to start.
We were just, like, waffling on, chatting a bit.
Do you start? Shall I start? How should we start? But then I think, like, I don't know, I'm just really proud of everything we've done. Like, now we sit in season two and we're like, how are we in season two? And I think the incredible people we've met already and the stories that we've spoken about, like, you know, when you just think, this is going to sound quite cheesy, but like when a vision just like comes to light, like, I don't know, I'm just really proud of everything that we've done. Everything we said that we wanted to set out to achieve, like we've either done it or we are on tracks to do it. And I just think that like how passionate we've been to like really try and make a difference. I hope that we are on our way to doing that, but no, it's been the best thing like we've ever done, what I've ever done.
People have asked
yourself, Gwen.
There we go, both of you. People often ask me, where do I? I want to do this thing, but I don't even know if there's someone sitting at home thinking, oh, I've always wanted to start a podcast, but where do you even start? Where do you start?
Well, we had help off Shira. So thanks, Shira.
Producer Shira, the Oracle.
Yeah. I rang Shira for an hour one day. Yeah. So you all need to find yourself Shira because she'll give you great advice.
And then she said, have you got a pen?
Well, yeah. I was right taking notes, actually.
And to be fair, Shira's list, which Fionn wrote down, was like a checklist of things to do. So it was like, basically like, what's our mission? What do we want to achieve?
That was
this?
My list, thank you. I made that list.
Okay. Yeah, Shira's helped to make Fionn's list.
Okay.
Which was a checklist.
Thank you.
So like we went through and said like what we want to be called. Fionn's like, say it how it is. I was like, okay. Oh, tick.
Okay.
That's that done.
Then the logo
took a bit of time.
No, in my defense, we were in a coffee shop and I'd had this idea of what like I wanted to do something like this, and I was like, I knew what it wanted to be called and everything, and I was like, okay, well, I need to find something to do it with. I could have done it by myself, but I was gonna say
she could not have done
it by herself. She's making me sound really bossy, but to be fair, I am the boss.
Thank you.
But then why did you say yes, Gwen?
Well, I love media, I love all sorts of things like that. Like I'm gonna dob myself in here, but I had a YouTube channel when I was young. It was a big passion of mine.
Gwen,
I'm not telling you what it's called.
You also had your own podcast thing too.
I did have my own podcast and I did like 10 episodes, but I was just, it's really hard just sitting in a room, which was like a crappy little microphone that I bought off Amazon, that I would just talk to myself. It was like more about like fitness and that kind of stuff, but I really loved that, and I love listening to podcasts. Like I actually was in the top 1% of listeners on Spotify last year. Yeah, 1%. I know, the world. Yeah, top 1%. Yeah, and that's due to all the podcasts and et cetera.
Give us your top five.
My top five podcasts.
Mm-hmm. Come on.
Say ours.
Top three.
Say it how it is.
Can I exclude our podcast and your podcast? Because then it...
Obviously.
Okay, cool. Top, probably Diary of a CEO. I yeah. think the guests that they get on, yeah. that you can learn a lot of different things. Modern Wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
High Performance Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Newlyweds.
Really?
Oh, so funny. It's so funny. Sometimes, I love learning things, but sometimes you just need to laugh.
I was going
to
say, because all I got there was self-improvement.
But sometimes you just...
Gwen's brain.
Yeah.
Scientist, smut.
One more. Let me think of one more. The Girls' Bathroom.
Oh, really?
So anyone listening to that is actually... So this is the thing, is I really like to learn, but sometimes you just want to listen to just... Oh, that's brilliant, that is. That cheers me up every Wednesday. And I know the release times and days of all of them because I listen to them as soon as they come
calendar?
Out.
Do you have a
calendar? Oh, yeah. I know what I'm listening to each day.
And when do you listen to them? What are you doing?
Oh, anything and everything. I constantly have noise. Constantly. Like,
always.
From when I wake up, yeah.
Yeah.
Podcast on, shower, making food, making coffee, working, everything.
I'm also one of those people.
Yeah.
Definitely. Absolutely insatiable appetite for someone talking at me the whole time.
Yes. So that's where my side of it came from. I wanted to do... And I really seen the benefit in sharing my rehab journey and on Instagram and having people being like, thank you so much for sharing this, like, and it's nice to see someone's go through the same, or thanks for sharing this, I'm going to use this in my rehab or mindset kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought a podcast is a really great way to get that out to more people, and not just about ACLs but also about loads of other different topics, because that's just one topic in a massive variety of them. So it was like a no-brainer. I was literally like, she was telling me about all this idea and I was like, so I don't know, are you asking me to be your co-host here, or are you just like running this by me to be like, yeah, that's a really good idea, Fee, like, well done.
Go you.
And then she was like, so do you? I was like, yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. I thought
we'd never
get there.
It all happened really fast,
like in a matter of weeks. Like,
you guys were colleagues before.
Yeah.
Mm.
And obviously were friends outside of work because you were like hatching this global domination of the podcast world plan as well. What have you learned about each other that you didn't know before you started podcasting?
Gwen interrupts all the time.
She keeps saying this, but it's so funny because on the podcast, like, the way my brain works is like, I'll almost like know what she's going to say / think that what I have to say is better. Mm. And then I'm joking. And then I'll just say it and then I'm like, oh no. Oh no, she's still speaking. But it's so funny because she just keeps speaking as if I've not even opened my mouth.
I do exactly the same thing.
But she does it back to me, but she only picks up on when I do it.
I just done it to her now.
I'm not done. That's what she does to me. She goes, I'm not done.
To be fair,
was actually not done, Fee.
Being serious though, I'm just interrupting her now. I've known Gwen for years, right? You're making me warm. I've known Gwen for years. We've actually known each other for quite a while. But it wasn't until we had our injury that we kind of realised how, I say alike, because we have some similarities.
Yeah, we're actually not alike. No, but we
just clicked.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, it was the understanding of knowing what each other was going through, and then we just clicked. And then what has been really nice through the podcast is we've had a lot of feedback from people saying that three like listening because they like they can see how much we love each other and like how nice our friendship is. And that's really nice too, because we feel it, because like we really care about each other, but it's really nice that comes across to other people too, because you are a very good friend.
Thanks, you're not bad yourself.
Thanks, Jill.
Thanks. I also have learned that Fiona's not bossy.
You can say I'm bossy, it's fine.
She gets stuff done, whereas I'm a little bit more like, okay, let's just think now, we need like, how are we going to do this? And by the time I've done that, she's done it.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, ah, right, okay, cool. She's genuinely not afraid to say it how it is. And I'm working on that. But like, we put out like these memos and like Thursday thought and stuff. And like, I'll design them and I'll think like, this is so cool. And I send it to Fiona and she's like, shit. And for me, no, you actually
don't
did.
Don't say that.
Fiona.
I have not said it
you
shit.
Did actually once say to me, like, no, oh, you
I
go,
didn't say shit. Yes. Like, it's basically saying shit, but not the actual that
but
shit.
What she doesn't understand sometimes about me is I get quite sensitive about stuff like that, because I've put time into that and I think it's good. And she's just like, I don't like it. Rather than being like, oh, maybe we can just change this, or, you know?
But can she take it as good as she
oh,
gives
she
it?
Can take it, yeah. But I'm just so not used to
oh, yeah,
the
I can
directness,
take it.
Do you know what I mean?
That's
whereas
how my, that's
I can
why
say
I am
to her
like this.
Shit and she'll be like, oh, yeah. Thanks for the feedback. I'll take that on board. And it takes me a week to recover from it.
I can give it.
It's not that bad.
I can give it because I can take it in return. So, and that's why that was a work on for me, because I was like, I want to. This is why it's called this, because I do say it how it is.
I'm interrupting.
You are doing it
at
again.
At one point, we sat down though, and I had to explain to her, like, feel like I can't take savage feedback like you. Like, I need you to just...
Oh, we did. Like, we were exchanging paragraphs because we were having this
we could go on forever on this. But another thing that I think we learned about each other was that, like, it's tricky doing something like a podcast or something businessy with your best friend.
Uh-huh.
Because everything becomes business.
Uh-huh.
And you're like... I asked, can we go for a coffee? And we went for a coffee and we just like, business. I was like, I actually asked for to come for a coffee with you as my friend.
Yeah.
But she's like, business.
It's just how my brain works, yeah, doesn't switch off.
It's not a bad thing. I'm not saying it's a bad thing.
And just to
have you
conclude,
learned anything about me?
Yeah, you're the articulate, wise one and I'm the emotional, expressive one. That's what our producer describes us. Fionn's emotional and expressive and Gwen's articulate and wise. I was like... Okay.
I think that makes us work because if we were both emotional and no one's speaking and it's a podcast, you know what I mean? Like, we can't just... And then, like, no words are coming out.
How does it go?
It's a bit, actually, she goes...
And I'm like, whacking her then. Like,
and she looks at me, she's like, take over. And then I'm just like, yeah. So what I think what Fionn's trying to say...
that's how it is. In a nutshell.
I love that because... I relate so much to obviously everything you guys are saying, but I've also felt that comes through so well, the balance of the two of you and your different energies that you bring. And you've learned so much about yourselves and about each other and about your teammates. I was really surprised at the end of the episode where you tell your story, Fionn. Now go listen to it if you haven't listened yet, because there might be some spoilers that come through here now. But also blubbed like crazy, like ugly cried through that a lot. But it was crazy at the end that you said you hadn't told Gwen.
Yeah.
So did you really not know?
I actually didn't know a thing. And when we were just thinking about starting the podcast, I think it was like, we had just recorded the intro, I think.
Yeah.
Or the episode one. And we went away to North Wales in pre-season. And we shared a room. And Fionn was like, just to let you know, episode 10 is going to be my story. I'm not going to tell... And I knew, I was like, episode 10, that's like ages away. We've only just done episode one.
But also, and then, what story?
Exactly. And she's like, I can't tell you what it is. I'm not going to tell you what it is until then. And I was like, are you serious? You've planted this seed in my head. And now I'm like,
now
well, what is it?
Leave me for how long?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like 3 months.
Well, it was, yeah. So it was September that conversation was, and we recorded in the middle of December. But obviously throughout this time, we got to know each other even more. So it was like, we're building this even more of a friendship. And I was like, there's still this massive thing that I don't know. We got to the episode. And again, I was just like, I don't know what to expect here. Like, it was like my genuine real reaction.
You were
to it
very
all.
Calm.
It was a weird setting to be able to do it in a studio, you know?
But that's what I kind of wanted from it. Like, it's something I thought about for majority of my life. And I knew I knew there was going to be time when I knew I was going to be ready to tell it. And that's the reason behind the podcast, is because I knew I had a story to tell and I knew that somebody needed to hear it and someone was going to benefit from hearing it. And it's kind of like fate how it's all turned out. That, like, it ended up working out where episode 10 was going to be me and I had the opportunity to tell my story. But with Gwen, I wanted it to be as real as authentic as possible. Like, I wanted a natural reaction, and, like, it was a crazy thing for me to do, and I was so, like, it was the scariest thing I've ever done, and I didn't want to keep building it up and building it up and building it up and having these conversations and making it scripted. I just wanted it to be natural. I wanted Gwen's questions to be natural rather than it being scripted. And I think that's just what my decision was around it. I'd storyboarded it in my own head and how I wanted it to go. And I had support around that, like, for Gwen being the person asking me. I just wanted that to be as real as possible. And it made me feel so comfortable, even though, like I said, it was the scariest thing I've ever done. But it's something I'm so glad now that I have, again, because the response I've had from the people that I've done it for, because they're the ones that needed to hear it.
Do you know that you're a producer?
Yes.
Your brain, like, I am diagnosing you now. You have no ability.
Diagnose you as a producer.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You have no ability to think about anything, even your own pain, without storyboarding it.
Yeah.
Did you hear yourself say that now?
Yeah, I know. Storyboarded my own story. Yeah.
Your own trauma.
Yeah.
Mm. And you were so composed.
Are you joking? I cried like a baby.
Yeah. Well,
I cried
considering
more.
Every single person I've spoken to that has listened to it said that they cried the whole, like, pretty much the whole time.
Yeah.
I was like, well, I think you just did pretty well because you were the one saying the words and it happened to you.
I think it's just because I was just so ready. Like, like I said, I've held that story in for years and years and years, and I've protected it, and I was just so ready to let it go. And I think I had confidence from the stories and the people I'd met throughout the season, because I'd seen them be vulnerable, sharing their stories with me, which gave me confidence to be vulnerable in return. Mm. So yeah.
So go listen to Say It How It Is. It's episode 10 of season 1, My Story with Fionn Lewis. This is the one where Fionn isn't the person interviewing, but she is the star of the whole unfolding of, I think, a great story of hope, of resilience. And rugby's in there, but only in as much as it is the vehicle to help you find ways of surviving.
Yeah, I'd say that to find your purpose, that's what rugby was for me. Like, you, if you're going through something similar, my advice is to just find a purpose and find something that can drive you out of that dark space. Rugby was what was getting me up out of bed in the morning and what was distracting my brain from everything that was going on at home. So, yeah, like I said, I probably... God knows what my life would be like if I didn't have that, but it was the purpose to me that was the most important part.
Now, this is obviously why you guys then work with Loose Heads the way you do. For those who don't know, they tackle the stigma around discussing mental health and providing dedicated leads for rugby clubs in the UK to support their own communities with mental health. And our friends and your friends, Vodafone, is the connectivity partner for Loose Heads. So they give them these mental health leads, SIM cards and free mobile connectivity, making sure that everyone stays connected and can keep communicating. And also that sense of belonging, of a safety net, of a network of people who outside of the game can also be there when you're coming off the pitch for everything else. Why is it important for you that that's part of the work that you do, Gwen?
I think in terms of like what we do with the podcast, it's all about the connection bit. Mm. And for me, like across my rehab, like, and now continuing across this rehab, having like connections with people and having like that time in the on the podcast to connect with different people and learn things from people. Mm. For me, that's really important. And I think that's exactly what Loose Heads are trying to do, is just bring people together and connect. And we're all about, you know, bringing vulnerable topics to life. And Loose Heads are all about opening the space to tackle the stigma of mental health and giving people the confidence to speak and be vulnerable. So it crosses over really nicely. And I've done quite a bit with Loose Heads, and they're absolutely brilliant charity to work with. And I think they're up to like 1,100 and something clubs now across the world that they're working with. And it's just growing so fast. And I think the more it grows, obviously, the more they can grow as a charity and the more people that they're going to be able to impact and affect. And I think the way they do it is in a really fun way as well. Like, we were both lucky enough to go into rugby clubs and deliver sessions. Got to chat to a little girl, and it was the cutest thing I've ever seen. And it comes back again, like, be who you needed when you were younger. And I think that video was really nice that Loose Heads put up. But yeah, they're just a great charity. And I think for them to be doing the kind of thing in terms of bringing vulnerable topics to light and tackling stigma in a sport like rugby, which is so typically aggressive and put on hard face and tough up and get on with it, I think that's really important, and it's a really important message.
Yeah, it's really interesting that you found your refuge fee. That shows you how hard your life is if the rugby's the easy part.
Mm. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Point, yeah. I think it was just so rugby, like, just gives you a sense of, like, for me, like, it just gave me a sense of belonging and a sense of, like, a community and a family that I felt like I didn't have. And, like, I turn up to rugby, everyone's on the same page. You can switch. As soon as I, like, put my boots on and get on the field, I just forget about everything. And, like, we're very lucky to be a part of. And, like I said, I've got friends for life from it now, so.
Love that. Mm. And from celebrating the great work that Loose Heads do and that you guys do with them, to some more great work being done on rugby pitches, it's time for our High Flyer of the Week, a segment brought to you by our good friends at British Airways. From round 3, we gave you the option to vote between Hannah Botterman, who put in a sensational performance, 55 metres, 13 carries, top carries. Jess Breach, 2 tries, nothing major, you know, 73 metres. And then Ellie Kildan, I mean...
Girls on fire.
Fantasy team captain of note, 2 tries, 97 metres carried. That try off Meg Jones's infield, Lionel Messi...
Sorry.
Oh my goodness.
It's something of dreams, like.
It's just a thing of beauty.
It's like a little sprinkle, I guess.
It's a French kiss, if you will.
Yeah. slash chef's kiss. If you like, don't know what we're talking about, go look at BBC Sport. They put that brilliant video together so celebrating good. Meg Jones, and she's dining out on it. Mo said she has not stopped calling herself Messi since it happened. But also she said, I'm taking a moment for the gear change in the finish of Ellie Kildan. So Ellie Kildan is making our BA High Flyer of the Week segment, I think, 3 weeks in a row now. Who would you have voted out of the three?
I personally would go Ellie Kildan.
Yeah, I would probably go Hannah Botterman.
Hannah Botterman, obviously, yeah, you're going for the forwards.
She's very consistent.
Oh, there
I
we
just,
go.
I just think Ellie Kildan's on another level at the moment.
Yeah, she is.
Like,
she is.
She just glides like a knife through butter. She does.
How does it, show me the hand move?
I don't know what kind of butter.
It's more like butter. I was going to say, are you cutting to
anything? Sorry, but
it?
I was, well, it's a compliment anyway. Yeah. No, I just, yeah, it'd be Ellie Kildan. She's just top finisher, like, yeah, on fire at the moment.
She can make something out of nothing
Absolutely
as well.
Absolutely something out of nothing. Yeah.
But, so our high flyer of the week, as it turns out, is Ellie Kildan. No surprises there. Thanks again to our friends at British Airways. To feel inspired for your next adventure, head over to ba.com. Now, on Saturday, England face Ireland at 2:15 live on the BBC. And if you are one of the, what are we tracking on, 48,000 people who will be in the stands, we will see you there. I'm so excited about our live show at the Cabbage Patch and all of the friends who are coming down. Producer Shira texted me over the weekend to say that she has bought herself a green onesie. Surprise. Do not give her the stink eye.
She also told me she was not going to talk to me last over the weekend.
Do not give her a stink eye. We love green teams around here, okay? Some of us just do.
I thought we liked red.
I'm sorry, this studio is very red, if you ask me. The only green thing in this room right now is Shira and her green jumper. So.
She's wearing all of her green outfits all the week long.
I feel like she's doing purpose.
She's rubbing
as well.
It in.
So Scott Beeman says there's going to be a big crowd. He's, of course, the coach of the Irish girls these days. He was in an England tracksuit last year, so this is a way of coming home, bringing them off the back of that big win over Wales. And then Italy play Scotland immediately after. This is really important when you're planning your Saturday. If you are going to be at Twickenham, you need to make sure that you're close to a TV at 4:45 p.m. for this game taking place in Parma, like the ham. Because these two teams, Italy and Scotland, were only separated by points difference. They were level on points on the log, and it's point difference that clinched the WXV2 title for Scotland. And then, dun, 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 on Sunday the 21st of April, Wales face France at Cardiff Arms Park. The French crowd last weekend was absolutely something. You do need Cardiff Arms Park to be roaring. Give us the pitch. For the fans out there who are feeling disillusioned by what they've seen so far, what difference does it make? Fionn Lewis, give us your best stab at a rallying cry.
Win or lose, you should still stay behind your team. I think we've been through a lot over the years, and especially how we performed last year, justifying the incredible support we had, but now we need people more than ever to stick behind us. Yeah, the French fans like to travel, so I'm sure they're going to be like roaring in the crowd. But yeah, we need people more than ever to lift us back up.
What difference does it make, Gwen?
A lot. I think, like, having played in games, for example, like against England, where there's like thousands and thousands and thousands of English fans, it's not nice when England make a break and like all you can hear is this massive roar. It's really hard as a player to sort of have the opposition have that. And I think if we can sort of gain that level of support, and we are definitely going in the right direction, like Cardiff Arms Park, you know, last home game was unbelievable. I just think we need to continue to push that, because that actually does make such a difference. And it is almost a form of like 16th player, where it's like in terms of that momentum swing, like if your crowd's behind you, it does, it gives you that extra 1% to want to go on and to score points.
So if you are one of those people who are angry, who might have been saying things on social media, go ahead and say them, but also turn up to support your team at the park on Sunday, because the dedication, the hope, the dream is all still very much alive.
Yeah, I just think that we need that belief from people is a really crucial point for us at the moment. So yeah, please come to Cardiff Arms Park.
And then
with that face, how could you say no?
And then please come to Cardiff Arms Park.
Come on.
Please come to Cardiff Arms Park. Is that better?
There we go. She's just delivered it. And then on the 27th of April, next Saturday, at 12:15 p.m. Wales will play Italy. I promise I will not wear my Italian blue shirt.
Please don't.
Told you that.
It went down too badly last time I did this.
That red blouse is nice. Wear that one.
Oh, I've got a few red ones.
Okay, brilliant.
You know, wear one of them then.
I've got options.
Matching red nails as well.
I'll make sure I bring the nails then. Okay, okay. Shililu. Okay, well they...
But did you say shililu?
Shululu.
Shililu.
Shululu.
Shululu.
Yeah. It's Afrikaans for wowie.
Oh, lovely. Wow. Shililu.
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 Well, Dioch.
Yes. On the that topic, was good.
On the we do the Gatterl G video art where I'm from. Gerbrand Grobler is not for nothing an Afrikaans name.
Good job.
Dioch, thank you so much for coming all the way down to London to our very red house. We will bring our red nails and our red tops and everything else red to Cardiff when we see you next. Before we go, we also just want to give Joy Neville her flowers, because not only did she earn 70 caps in the beautiful green of Ireland, she turned referee and led the way in a refereeing career of note. She has hung up her whistle to take up a job with World Rugby in their referee development system, and she will be the person coaching the women's referees of the future. Go well, Joy, and rugby is very lucky to have you. You've been an absolute trailblazer, and the game and all of the women who work across it now at all levels of it, and the men working in it, honor you. Thank you for stopping by, girls. You've already received your GSR scrunchies when we were last in Cardiff. I'm surprised.
Wait.
Are you wearing this? She's wearing it.
Yeah, and I'm only not wearing it because it doesn't match with pink.
I don't think that's good enough excuse, personally.
But maybe game day.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
When we
in 2035.
Right, don't start this, though, yeah. When I'm 60, no.
Okay.
Next time.
No, anyway. Next time. When we come to Cardiff on the 27th of
August. Oh, yeah, that game day. As in the game day.
Sorry.
Oh, yeah, we'll be there.
Yes, when
forget
we have
the game,
a game
day goes ahead when we're not there.
Yes, it does.
Okay. There are other games, also ones that they don't play in.
Anyway.
We've been the good, the scars, and the rugby without any scars this week. Courtesy of Fionn and Gwen. We've been the Good, the Scars and the Rugby, brought to you by our friends at Vodafone. The Good, the Scars and the Rugby is a Folding Pocket production produced by Shira Kilgallen.
You've been listening to The Good, the Scars and the Rugby. A bit like Loose Women, but with less emphasis on working on your pelvic floor.
French kiss. Chef's kiss. Is that the word? French kiss is something else. Chef's kiss.